This is the BBC.
Order, order.
Hello, this is Sean Curran with the Today in Parliament podcast for Wednesday the 13th of September, when the Prime Minister and the Labour leader were at odds over public sector pay. Jeremy Corbyn said the UK economy was at breaking point and attacked the Chancellor, Philip Hammond.
He told Conservative MPs, look at us, no mortgage, everybody with a pension, never had more money in the current account.
Theresa May accuses the opposition leader of breaking his promises and says he won't talk about the latest unemployment figures.
People taking home a wage, a salary to support their families at record levels, the highest level since records began.
Also tonight, why are members of the Northern Ireland Assembly still being paid when they haven't sat since January?
It is an absolute scandal that this continues to be the case.
And the barriers to women entering Parliament.
If you want more female MPs, it's probably a good idea to stop abusing the ones you've got already.
But let's start with the last session of Prime Minister's questions for a while. At the end of this week, Parliament will break for 3 weeks of party conferences. The Labour leader, Jeremy Corbyn, attacked the government's handling of the economy, with a particular focus on public sector pay and student tuition fees. This week, the government signalled the end of its 1% cap on pay rises for public sector workers in England and Wales, with pay increases for police and prison officers. But Jeremy Corbyn said the government hadn't gone far enough because the proposed pay rises were below the rate of inflation.
Does the Prime Minister understand that inflation is now 2.9%? Anything less means that dedicated public servants are worse off again, and they've been made worse off every year for the past 7 years. Yesterday, the Prison Officers Association weren't impressed either with the 1.7% offer, saying it's a pay cut, it's not acceptable.
Theresa May said the Labour leader had failed to point out that the government had followed the recommendations of independent pay review bodies. And she said many public sector workers got an automatic pay rise over and above the 1% increase.
Indeed, a calculation suggests that a new police officer in 2010, thanks to progression pay and annual basic salary increases and the increase in the personal allowance that is a tax cut for people... have actually seen an increase in their pay of over £9,000 since 2010, a real terms increase of 32%.
As the exchanges continued, Jeremy Corbyn turned his attention to the Chancellor, Philip Hammond, who was sitting next to Theresa May on the government front bench.
He told Conservative MPs, look at us, no mortgage, everybody with a pension, never had more money in the current account. A Conservative Prime Minister once told Britain, you've never had it so good. Now Tory MPs tell each other, we've never had it so good.
Theresa May complained that Mr Corbyn had not welcomed the latest employment figures.
That show unemployment at lowest levels since the mid-1970s. And employment, people in work. People taking home a wage, a salary to support their families at record levels, the highest level since records began.
The Labour leader called on the Prime Minister to support an opposition motion, which called on the government to scrap the regulations which allow universities in England to increase student tuition fees.
Her government, with the support of the Lib Dems, trebled tuition fees. Will the Prime Minister take the opportunity this afternoon to vote against another Tory hike in student fees?
Theresa May said Jeremy Corbyn had broken a series of promises.
The Right Honourable Gentleman promised workers that he'd protect their rights, and on Monday he let them down. He promised students that he would deal with their debt, and he's let them down.
The Labour leader said the UK was in the middle of an economic slowdown.
Not only is our economy at breaking point, but for many people, it's already broken as they face up to the poverty imposed by this government.
But Theresa May said the British economy was enjoying record levels of direct investment and employment.
Labour Party would only destroy our economy as they did last time. We had to sort it out. The only people who pay the price for the Labour Party are ordinary working families.
The leader of the SNP at Westminster, Ian Blackford, complained that real wages in the UK had fallen by 2.6% since 2007.
Wages aren't growing. The cost of living is rising. Household budgets are stretched.
The Prime Minister said the SNP government was failing the people of Scotland and complained that Mr Blackford hadn't mentioned the employment figures.
The one thing I can tell him and others is that the Scottish economy and the livelihoods of the people of Scotland are better off in the United Kingdom.
The Liberal Democrat leader, Sir Vince Cable, accused the government of treating European fruit pickers and cleaners as an economic threat, but said ministers were completely relaxed about UK rail, energy and technology companies coming under European ownership and control.
Isn't this a question of being biddable to big business, but paranoid about people?
Theresa May said the UK wanted to welcome the brightest and the best, before turning to the question of a second EU referendum. She said Sir Vince had once called the idea seriously disrespectful.
So I was rather disappointed to hear that he has now reversed his position and backs a second referendum. But perhaps it's not unusual for a Liberal Democrat to say one thing before the election and another after it.
Now, MPs have unanimously backed a Labour motion calling for an end to the pay cap and a fair rise for workers in the NHS in England. But the Health Secretary, Jeremy Hunt, said it was a bogus debate and attacked Labour's record in office. Simon Jones reports.
Public sector pay was frozen for 2 years in 2010, except for those earning less than £21,000 a year. Since 2013, rises have been capped at 1%. The government has said the cap on public sector pay in England and Wales will be lifted, with ministers being given flexibility to breach the cap. That didn't go far enough for Labour's Shadow Health Secretary, Jonathan Ashworth, opening the debate on his party's call for a fair pay rise for NHS staff. He demanded more money for the health service to pay for an increase that was urgently needed.
Nurses turning to food banks, pawning their possessions, even being issued with eviction notices. Isn't that shameful in 21st century Britain? And what a depressing consequence of Tory economics.
A Conservative MP and former nurse, Maria Caulfield, supported lifting the pay cap, but she accused Mr Ashworth of not being honest about how it would be paid for.
So if Labour want to raise the pay cap, can he explain how the Labour Party are going to pay for it? Is it through increased taxation? Is it through more public borrowing? Or are you going to is the Labour Party going to shift spending priorities? We need to know the detail in order to be able to support it.
Jonathan Ashworth said it was about choices, pointing to the £1 billion the government had found for Northern Ireland to secure the support of the Democratic Unionists. The DUP's Ian Paisley intervened.
Myself and my colleagues are minded to support the motion that he has put before the House this evening. But it would be appropriate if true sincerity was shown by all members of this House if they stopped attacking the government for giving Northern Ireland that £1 billion so that we can alleviate the costs that would allow us to make that pay gap narrow.
The Shadow Health Secretary said he didn't begrudge Northern Ireland the money. The point was the government had found it. Jonathan Ashworth said scrapping the pay cap was essential to tackle what he said was a recruitment and retention crisis in the NHS, which was leading to closures and cancelled operations.
So the pay cap, Mr Speaker, not only is it unfair on hard-working staff who are struggling to make ends meet, it is unfair on patients who suffer the direct consequences of understaffed, overstretched services.
The Health Secretary, Jeremy Hunt, described the Labour motion calling for an end to the cap and a fair pay rise bogus.
Every Labour government in modern times has left office with unemployment higher when they left office than when they arrived. And that is why this afternoon's motion is so bogus, because the difference between this side of the House and that side of the House is not about a desire to invest in public services. It is about the ability to deliver a strong economy so that we can make that investment.
And that, said Mr Hunt, is what the Conservatives had done. He was challenged by the Liberal Democrat Norman Lamb, a health minister in the coalition government. He said the NHS could not be sustained if staff continued to suffer what were real terms cuts in pay.
That would ultimately be unconscionable year after year. And does he also accept that as the difference between public and private sector pay narrows so much, people will just vote with their feet and leave? And so It's both morally wrong, but also it won't work ultimately.
Mr Hunt accepted that recruitment was a crucial issue, but before awarding any pay increases, he would take the advice of the independent pay review bodies. And the Health Secretary said that it was the Conservatives who were the real friends of the NHS.
The party that's delivered more doctors, more nurses, more funding than ever before in its history, or the party that plays politics with the NHS in election after election, despite doing it so much harm.
At the end, Labour's motion was passed without a vote after the Conservatives didn't oppose it. Although that decision is not binding on ministers, the Shadow Health Secretary said the government had not opposed the motion because it knew it would lose the vote. Mr Ashworth said the Commons had been unanimous in saying health workers should get a fair increase in pay.
Simon Jones. Labour also chose the subject of the second debate of the afternoon. The party tabled a motion opposing an increase of £250 a year in the cap on student tuition fees at universities in England. Once again, the Labour motion was passed without a vote after the Conservatives abstained. The Shadow Education Secretary, Angela Rayner, said the increase in tuition fees was completely unfair.
We wouldn't even be having this debate today, Mr Speaker, if the Labour Party had won the general election, because we would have abolished tuition fees, as promised.
The Education Secretary, Justine Greening, said Labour's policy was a con trick.
No fees means fewer students at worse universities. That policy, Labour's policy on having no tuition fees, is anti-social mobility policy writ large, and it's a disgrace.
There'd been suggestions that the DUP would support this Labour motion on university fees. The SNP's Carol Monaghan noted none of the party's MPs were in the chamber for the start of the debate.
I was interested to see how the DUP members were going to vote today. Were they happy to continue in their support of high fees in England whilst getting their £1 billion bribe? But it appears that they have all headed to the airport.
At the end of the debate, after the motion had been approved unanimously, Angela Rayner called on Justine Greening to reverse the rise in tuition fees.
Constitutional crisis because this government is running scared and not allowing votes in this House.
The Shadow Education Secretary, Angela Rayner. You're listening to Today in Parliament on BBC Radio 4 with me, Sean Curran. Still to come, the Environment Secretary reveals that the Cabinet is one big happy family.
We're brothers from a different mother.
But first, the Northern Ireland Secretary James Brokenshire has urged political parties to work to restore power sharing in Belfast, warning them that time is short. Rachel Byrne reports.
The Northern Ireland Executive collapsed in January and power sharing talks are deadlocked. Sinn Féin and the DUP, Northern Ireland's two biggest parties, have blamed each other for the lack of progress. The Northern Ireland Secretary James Brokenshire told the Commons that the government's clear and resolute focus was to re-establish devolved government.
Together with the Irish government, we are continuing to support the party's efforts to find resolution and form an executive. However, time is short and I urge the parties to continue to work to reach an agreement.
Theresa May has held separate telephone conversations with the DUP leader, Arlene Foster, and her Sinn Féin counterpart in Northern Ireland, Michelle O'Neill. The DUP's leader at Westminster, Nigel Dodds, explained what Arlene Foster would have said to the Prime Minister.
She will have heard from our party leader a total commitment to restoring devolution immediately with no red lines or preconditions, to get on with the job of dealing with health, education, jobs and investment in Northern Ireland. Can the Secretary of State indicate whether Sinn Féin continue to adhere to the view that these matters are not as important as seeking partisan political demands to be fulfilled, or whether any progress was made on that front?
James Brokenshire replied that he welcomed what the DUP had said about wanting a return to Stormont.
I would also point to the comments of Michelle O'Neill, who has said that she believes that whilst there are difficulties, that a deal is still doable. I would certainly encourage him and his party to engage in the way that they have, and certainly encouraging all parties to have that focus on seeing devolution restored.
The DUP's Jim Shannon said Northern Ireland departments had been rudderless for months.
If Sinn Féin continues to hold this government and the people of Northern Ireland to ransom, will the Secretary of State step in and ensure that proper political oversight is provided for each department to ensure accountability and accessibility is back in the cards?
James Brokenshaw replied that time was indeed running short.
There's a lack of a budget in Northern Ireland, and that cannot continue for much longer. The more we head into October, the bigger the challenges that are there.
Labour asked what Dublin could do as co-guarantors of the Good Friday Agreement in moving the peace process forward. The Northern Ireland Minister, Chloe Smith.
There has indeed been close cooperation with the Irish government every step of the way in seeking to re-establish the devolved government. This is a common and shared priority.
However, she said good governance in Northern Ireland was the UK government's responsibility, as was the delivery of public services. The independent MP, Lady Herman, pointed out that while the Stormont Assembly wasn't functioning, Assembly members were still being paid.
Why on earth do the MLAs, 90 of them, continue to receive their full salaries and their full staffing allowance? It is an absolute scandal if this continues to be the case.
James Brokenshaw said he heard that message loud and clear.
There is no direct way in which I can intervene. There's no legislation that would authorise me to do so. But I do hear that message. And as I said in my speech in Cambridge on Friday, you know, if we were to be a situation where the UK government has to make more directive decisions, that is certainly an issue I would have to consider.
In that speech in Cambridge, the Northern Ireland Secretary said that if things didn't change, ministers were on a glide path to greater and greater UK government intervention. But he said at the time, we can still change course.
Rachel Byrne. Now, on Tuesday, loyal listeners to Today in Parliament heard the former Brexit minister, Lord Bridges, warn the government against careless talk over the UK's exit from the European Union. A Lib Dem, Lady Ludford, reminded her fellow peers what he'd said.
We must be honest about the task we face, its complexity and scale. We must be honest about the need to compromise and about the lack of time that we have to come to an agreement on withdrawal. Is the government going to take his advice?
Lord Bridges was replaced as Brexit minister by Lady Ainley, who responded diplomatically.
My Lord, sir, we listened to his advice when he was a minister and we still listen to it now.
The Labour former Cabinet Minister Peter Hain said he'd seen a report which suggested the Prime Minister was planning to pull out of the European Economic Area. And in order to bypass the European Commission, she would
extend an invitation to all EEA member states, that's the European Union ones and Liechtenstein, Norway and Switzerland, to enter into direct talks with the UK to create some sort of new EEA agreement. Surely this bonkers idea cannot possibly be true.
The minister told Lord Hain she hadn't seen the report. Now, there's been a renewed call for people accused of sexually abusing children to be given anonymity while they're being investigated. The issue was raised in the Lords, where there was strong criticism of the way the police have handled recent high-profile cases. Alicia McCarthy reports.
Operation Midland was launched after claims that boys had been sexually abused by a group of powerful men from the worlds of politics, the military and the law in the 1970s and 80s. The investigation cost £2.5 million, but closed without a single arrest or charge. A review by a retired High Court judge, Sir Richard Enriquez, found a string of failings and made 25 recommendations, including giving a suspect anonymity prior to arrest. The Liberal Democrat peer and former Metropolitan Police officer, Lord Paddock, pressed the minister over Sir Richard's findings.
Until, and I quote, until anonymity is enforced by statute, it is inevitable that many accused will lose their anonymity at an early stage of an investigation. Why will the government not legislate?
The Home Office Minister, Lady Williams, said the guidance to the police was clear.
That the rationale for naming an arrested person before they are charged must be authorised by the Chief Officer. The authorising officer must also consult the Crown Prosecution Service if considering the release of a name.
A Conservative, Lord Lexton, thought action was needed on another front.
To ensure that police forces throughout our country conduct themselves with absolute propriety and honour when investigating allegations, which, if mishandled, and some have been, can ruin the lives of innocent people and besmirch the reputations of the innocent deceased.
Lady Williams accepted that where people were falsely accused and their names were in the media, lives could be ruined.
The College of Policing guidance provides that where an investigation identifies a false allegation, it may be appropriate to support a prosecution for attempting to pervert the course of justice.
Another Conservative, Lord Tugendhat, turned to what he described as one of the most disturbing aspects of Operation Midland.
What might be termed the malicious gullibility of the police, and that has done a great deal to undermine public confidence in the Metropolitan Police. And I think it would be appropriate in these circumstances if she was to show a little bit more indignation and a little less calm in the face of what has been a very grave injustice.
A former head of the civil service and now independent peer, Lord Armstrong, said the minister had recently told him it was right that there'd been a review of Operation Midland.
Would she not agree that it would be no less absolutely right to commission an independent review of the Operation Conifer, which was the Wiltshire Police's investigation of allegations relating to the late Sir Edward Heath, given the concerns that have been expressed about the conduct of that operation?
Lady Williams said it wasn't for her to comment on an individual case. Labour's Lord Campbell Savers reckoned there was one aspect that needed to be looked at.
People who make false allegations that turn out subsequently to be untrue are not required to pay back the compensation they receive from the Criminal Injuries Compensation Authority, as indeed has happened in the Heath case.
The minister said she'd already set out what could happen to those who made false accusations, and compensation was not a matter for her.
Alicia McCarthy. Now, a handful of newly elected MPs are still to make their maiden speeches. But today, Labour's Stephen Morgan got his chance and he used it to describe the diverse history of Portsmouth South's parliamentary representation.
In my lifetime, this constituency has cycled through representatives from the SDP, Liberal Democrats, Tories and now Labour. I hope, Madam Deputy Speaker, it is now settled on a choice it can stick with.
A few hours later, another Labour member, Preet Gill, made her first speech in the Commons. She said it was an honour to be the first female Sikh MP.
For many decades, Sikhs have lived in this country, paid their taxes, fought in world wars and contributed to society in every way imaginable. It is a historical moment for Sikhs in this country, because Parliament is beginning to look more like the people it serves.
Yeah. Preet Gill, who represents Birmingham Edgbaston, a seat which has elected a woman MP in every poll since 1953. But at the last election, barely one in three candidates were female. So what obstacles do women face? MPs have been debating the issue, as Mandy Baker reports.
Eagle-eyed watchers of Parliament would have noticed that last night, as MPs voted in the debate about Commons committees, several babies were present in the chamber. The SNP's Hannah Bardell said she was happy to welcome small visitors, but wondered why they were there.
Whether it's men or women who've had children in recent weeks should not have to come into this place with their children and be breastfeeding and having to go through the lobbies. We should have a system, either proxy or digital, where people can vote remotely.
But being in the chamber to vote was just one of the issues that caused problems for female MPs. The Conservative Mims Davis, who'd called the debate, said the job description wasn't very attractive.
Let me sell you a job with long hours where you're open to abuse, sexism, jeering. The pressures and responsibilities of your job for your constituents are, of course, immense. You won't see your family as much as you'd like. In fact, as has been the case this week, you might see your sleeping bag or your sofa a little bit more.
Indeed, the abuse was clearly a big issue, according to a Conservative, Nigel Huddleston.
If you want more female MPs, it's probably a good idea to stop abusing the ones you've got already.
On that point, Labour's Chris Bryant said he was dismayed at the reported gruesome remarks of the former Conservative Chancellor George Osborne, who allegedly said that he wouldn't rest until Theresa May was chopped up in bags in my freezer.
He should apologise and withdraw. It's that kind of language, which I think is misogynistic in its basis, that needs to be done away with.
The Labour former deputy leader, Harriet Harman, said things had got a lot better. She recalled the time when there were only two women MPs in the whole of Northern England.
And I remember complaining to my Labour colleagues and them saying, women in the North don't want to be MPs. Oh, yes, they did. And one even said, there aren't any women in the North, which was obviously not true.
The Conservative MP, Antoinette Sandbach, is a single mother. She said she was anxious to encourage others in the same position.
When I see other women, I say, it doesn't matter whether you're a Conservative or not, please get involved in politics. Get involved in what you believe in. Realise that you can make changes. And you can make changes in this place, as we all know, as backbenchers. You don't need to be ministers.
Another Conservative, Victoria Atkins, criticised Labour's business managers who were refusing to approve pairing, where the absence of one party's MP is offset by the other party agreeing for one of its members to abstain.
I understand that Labour whips are refusing to pair mums who should be on maternity leave and are being dragged back to the chamber. Please, can she encourage her whips office to do that?
But for Labour, Dawn Butler countered that the government whips were being equally unhelpful.
When the government doesn't say when we can have opposition day debates or when they're going to have certain discussions, it doesn't help.
The Equalities Minister Anne Milton stepped in.
If we want to change things, we have to take down the party political barriers. There is fault on every side, and all political parties have done what they can, what feels appropriate for them, to make sure some of those barriers come down.
She said Parliament must ensure that the voice of 50% of the population was equally represented.
Mandy Baker. The Environment Secretary, Michael Gove, says he won't allow chickens that have been washed in chlorine into the UK, even if that jeopardises a potential post-Brexit trade deal with the United States. Mr Gove was asked about the issue by the Conservative chair of the Environment Committee, Neil Parish.
It's perfectly safe to eat under WTO rules. It's very poor on animal welfare and hygiene standards, but it's still safe to eat. And you would actually tell me that that would hold up the whole deal. You're going to put that on the record, are you?
Yes.
Right, good. We'll hold you to it, Secretary of State.
Mr Parish also asked the Minister, a leading Leave campaigner, about his closeness to the Brexit Secretary and the International Trade Secretary.
What is your sort of direct relationship with David Davis and Liam Fox so that, you know, as these negotiations are going on, you actually can get your input directly to those that might be doing the direct negotiation?
Well, we're brothers from a different mother. We are...
Michael Gove gestured towards the wheat he was wearing in his lapel in honour of Back British Farming Day.
We are... close as the sheaves of wheat that are banned in this particular Back British Farming buttonhole.
And those comments from Michael Gove bring us to the closing headline from Westminster. Theresa May and Jeremy Corbyn have clashed over public sector pay and the state of the economy. The Labour leader said the UK economy was at breaking point, but the Prime Minister said it was strong, with a record number of people in work. I'm Sean Curran. The editor was Mandy Baker. And that was the Today in Parliament podcast. Thanks for listening.
You can download many more BBC Radio 4 programmes for free. Find these at bbc.co.uk/radio4.